Page Romans 7. Introduction. 1. Fact and fiction, romantic impossibility, and historical likelihood are intertwined at many stages of Arthurian story. There is, to begin with, the richness and enigmatic quality of all things connected with Arthur, a beguilingly beautiful labyrinth. Arturi regi ambegi pulserim, for Dante at the end of the 13th century, and a continuing attraction in the 17th for Milton, who thought he might find a theme fit for an epic in a tale of Arthur, moving wars beneath the earth. That is one side, and a lasting side, of Arthurian story. In such reincarnations, we have rex quondam rexque futurus, the king who once was and who will be again. Given the archetype, the appropriate magic follows. Who would have thought that a hero of this order might in fact be traced in history? Yet there is ground for believing in the existence of Victorious Commander, a Briton of the later 5th century, leading a series of successful encounters with invaders, and possibly traitorous Britons, footnote 1, a glorious career with which later generations thought of as ended not by external defeat, but by dissension within the warband. Footnote 1. See Kenneth Jackson, The Arthur of History, in Arthurian Literature in the Middle Ages, editor R. S. Loomis, Oxford, 1959, pages 1 through 11. Return to text. This is the Arthur who is first reflected in the pages of Geoffrey of Monmouth, 1136, and it is this Arthur who continued to appeal to medieval English writers, a leader whose triumphant course ends in the lamentable division of his kingdom. He passes from men's sight as one whose glory is not overthrown, but temporarily eclipsed. French writers, on the other hand, appear from the outset to be chiefly interested in one outstanding member of Arthur's company, Sir Lancelot. And in handling this theme, they seize from the beginning on the tragic possibilities that lie in wait for chivalry, when it is drawn aside from the only true quest, the seeking out of the high secrets and hidden things of our Lord. Page Roman 8. The Grail is the goal of man's highest endeavor, and by this standard, Sir Lancelot, best of earthly knights, falls short. An English author who has before him both English and French tellings of Arthurian stories is dealing with potentially irreconcilable material, and this point is central to all assessment of Malory's Morte. Since French sources bulk large in his work, Malory has been subject to what his best exponent has, with characteristic modesty, called almost a necessary evil. An English author edited by a French scholar, Roman 1, an all-learned debate must run the risk of strong, if latent, preconception in favor of an original, which Malory may be thought of as translating. Footnote 1. Eugene Vinever, The Works of Sir Thomas Malory, Oxford, 2nd edition, 1967, page Roman 10. Quotations from this edition are made with acknowledgments to the Clarendon Press. Return to text. In this light, he is always in danger of being judged, for good or will, in terms of his faithfulness as an intermediary. His individuality as a writer is liable to be underrated or all but ignored. Malory's individual being as a man, his historical identity, has provided a paradox, too. Since the 1890s, beginning with the skillful advocacy of the American scholar Kittredge, it has been generally accepted that the author was a certain Sir Thomas Malory, or Malore, M-A-L-E-O-R-E, with variant spellings, who lived at Newbold Revel in Warwickshire, soldiered at Calais in his youth under the great Richard Beauchamp, Earl of Warwick, and came to see in the decline of the Lancastrian fortunes a parallel with the overthrow of King Arthur's rule. He even gives Mordred, the insurgent in his story, a Yorkist-like army drawn from southeastern England. All very pleasant and probable, no doubt, but this Sir Thomas turns out, on later inquiry, to have been a prisoner, and his offenses include armed assault and rape. Apologists have reminded us of the turbulent times in which he lived, but the rape with which Mallory was charged cannot be explained away as a technicality in the forcible eviction of a tenant. Page Roman 9. Two offenses were alleged, and the charge reads unambiguously, cum e carnaliter concubuit. This rather unpromising figure, then, appears to be the author of the noble and joyous history of the great conqueror and excellent king, King Arthur. And, to crown all, there came to light at Winchester in 1934 a manuscript which showed clearly how the writer had set about his task. The work is divided into clearly defined sections, a series of prayers for help or deliverance, occurring throughout the book, amplifying the single prayer that Caxton had printed at the end. And one of them makes it plain that the petitioner is a knight prisoner. And one section, that on the Roman War, Caxton's book, Roman 5, is notably longer in the manuscript than in the printed text. By this single discovery, we are now given new information about the author, about the mode of composition, and, by implication, about the first editor, William Caxton, who published his edition in 1485. This, of course, in turn raised other problems, and the effect was to suspend Mallorian studies until a full text of the Winchester manuscript was available. It appeared in 1947 as The Works of Sir Thomas Malory, edited by Eugene Vinever, with a revised edition based on a fresh collection and incorporating new matter in the commentary, appearing in 1967. With the text of Winchester before them, scholars have begun to engage in lively discussion. In the field of interpretation, one matter has been strikingly dominant, the question of unity. Could Mallory be said to have written a whole book, or instead 8 separate romances, hence the significance of Vinever's title, The Works of Sir Thomas Mallory? As to the author himself, William Matthews has recently come forward with a vigorous claim for a Yorkshire knight in place of Kittredge's ill-framed candidate. Footnote 1. The Ill-Framed Knight, Berkeley and Los Angeles, 1966. Ill-framed reflects Vinever's conjecture that the name Mallory derives from a nickname meaning ill-framed or ill-set. Return to text. The debate on these counts as on others continues, and the general liveliness of interest in Arthurian matter can be seen from evidence as widely differential as the musical Camelot, based on T.H. White's serio-comic reshaping of Mallory, the once and future king, an excavation begun in 1966 and still continuing at South Cadbury Castle, which appears to have been the base of a British ruler on some substance, whether Arthur or another. Camelot, according to John Leland, was a local name for it in the 16th century, and the name is perpetuated in Camelot Research Committee, which has charge of the work. Page Roman 10. As their president sternly puts it, we may yet live to see another convergence of fact and tradition, similar to that which brought Troy and Mycenae out of legend into fact. Footnote 1. Sir Mortimer Wheeler, in the committee's leaflet, Can This Be Camelot? As to the legend, readers of the personal column of the Times were notified on 22 July 1955, I think I have identified the Holy Grail. Return to text. Leaving aside all further question of historical identity, Mallory's no less than Arthur's, what shall we say of Mallory's contribution to the legend, his labor to tell of King Arthur and of his noble knights of the Round Table? 2. Arthur, the monarch of a kingdom that falls by treachery, makes his first appearance in Geoffrey of Monmouth's History of the Kings of Britain, written in 1136. There he is at the height of success, ready to march into Italy, having defeated the Roman army, when he hears of Mordred's treachery in seizing the throne and marrying the queen. Arthur returns to Britain and is at first victorious against the rebels. But in the last battle, beside the River Camel in Cornwall, Though Mordred falls, Arthur himself is fatally wounded, and, appointing successor to the crown, he is taken to the island of Avalon for the healings of his wounds. When this matter is first handled in French, all interest is focused not upon Arthur, but upon Sir Lancelot, Le Roman de Lancelot du Lac, 1225-30, consists of Lancelot, an account of the quest for the Holy Grail, and the death of King Arthur. Page Roman 11. And this was later enlarged by the Histoire del Grail and the Histoire de Merlin. The focus from beginning is firmly upon Lancelot, and his failure to achieve the Grail gives the measure of earthly chivalry. The son, Galahad, succeeds where Lancelot falls short. More important, from our present point of view, is the function of the Mort Arthur, the section dealing with Arthur's defeat and death. It is there to describe Lancelot's final failure, that which occurred when he was called upon to save Arthur and his kingdom. Footnote 1. Viniver, The Tale of the Death of King Arthur, Oxford, 1955, page Roman 10, return to text. The French Arthurian cycle establishes clearly the gap between earthly and spiritual. By this standard, knights who have shown little secular prowess, Galahad, Bors, Percival, shine forth, and Lancelot and Arthur are inevitably headed for disaster. The distinction is well summed up in terms first used by E.K. Chambers, footnote 2. Footnote 2. His essay, Sir Thomas Malory, read to the English Association in 1922, is reprinted in Sir Thomas Wyatt and Some Collected Studies, London, 1933, pages 21-45, return to text. Corbenic, The Castle Where the Grail is Achieved, predominates over Camelot, the region par excellence of the chivalric life. Readers who come to Arthurian story with this tradition, derived perhaps from Tennyson or from Wagner, rather than medieval writers, coloring their thoughts will find it difficult to know what Malory is about, and may find him unduly prosaic, insensitive to what they take to be the true import of his material. We must, however, remind ourselves that there is no one version of Arthurian material towards all which all others must aspire. In contrast with the French and the earliest English versions of the story, Layamon's Brut, written in the closing years of the 12th century, and the alliterative Morte Arthur, about 1360, tell the story simply in terms of the chronicle tradition. Here, as in Geoffrey of Monmouth, the center of attention is Arthur, and the story of stark disaster overtaking his kingdom once loyalty is breached. Page Roman 12. There is only one instance before Malory of an English writer working from a French sort, the Stanzaic Le Mort d'Arthur, dating from the late 14th century, and it is very noticeable that this writer disregards the link between the Grail and the Lancelot themes. He leaves his readers to confront the dire events of which Lancelot, Arthur, and Guinevere are the victims. Like Lancelot's seven companions, now turned hermit, we must resign ourselves to things which pass our understanding. Quote, Of Lancelot du Lake, tell I no more, but this by leave, asterisk, leave, these ermits seven, asterisk, the seven hermits. And yet, asterisk, still to this present day, is Arthur buried Thor, asterisk, there. And Gwen Gaynor, as I wild Nevin, asterisk, name, tell, assure, with monks that are right of lore, they read and sing with mild Stevin, asterisk, in hushed voices, issue that suffered wounds sore, grant us all the bliss of heaven, amen, end quote. Explicit Le Mort Arthur. Here is something which, it may be argued, has qualities equal and opposite to those of the French romances. Where they provide explanation and continuity, the English writer presents unmitigated reality, what indubitably happened in all its sharpness. If he refers to fortune's wheel, that convincing instrument of destiny, it is in terms that only underline cruel inevitability. The wheel turns in Arthur's nightmare before the last battle, and he falls into darkness, a blank water, to be rent limb from limb by monsters. Here then is the version which, notwithstanding French sources, is graphically simple, leaving the audience free to make what they can of the connections between what men are and the things that befall them. Mallory, in his turn, must be allowed the same freedom.